Right, 6:02, and I'm gonna call to order the regular session of the Board of Commissioners meeting of the Humble Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District. We have a roll call, please.
Absolutely. Commissioner Norton?
Present.
Commissioner Benson?
Present.
Commissioner Newman?
Here.
Commissioner Gale?
Here.
Professor Coleman?
Here. All right, and if you care to join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I believe that this is the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you. Do we have a report on closed session?
Yeah.
No reportable action was taken during tonight's closed session.
All right, thank you. Then we'll move on to public comment. This portion of the agenda allows the public to speak to the board on the various issues not itemized on this agenda tonight. A member of the public may also request that a matter appearing on the consent calendar, which is directly below on the agenda, be pulled and discussed separately. Pursuant to the Brown Act, the board may not take action on any item that does not appear on the agenda. Each speaker is limited to speak for a period of 3 minutes regarding each item on the agenda, and then each speaker is limited to speak for a period of 3 minutes during the public comment portion of the agenda regarding items of special interest to the public, not appearing on the agenda that are within the subject matter jurisdiction of the Board of Commissioners. And if you're on the phone, you can use *9 to raise your hand for a public comment or a comment on agenda items. Do we have anyone who wishes to make public comment tonight? Seeing none in the room, none online. All right. Or anyone? We don't have a whole lot on the consent calendar, so anyone wishing to pull anything from the consent calendar? Board.
Move that we adopt the consent.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second for the consent calendar. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed or abstain? Hearing none. Moving on to communications, reports, and correspondence received.
No correspondence received this time.
All right.
Moving into the executive director's report. So we've been working on a multi-region blue economy working group. And this is through the California Jobs First Act, which is a governor-sponsored program. There is a considerable sum of money in total, almost $500 million up for grab. And in both of our regional investment teams that we're on, we've been invited to apply for the award. So we had to go through three different levels of these groups. We'll be looking at a long-term, basically a dredging plan for small harbors. This includes Noyo Harbor, Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District, Crescent City Harbor. And it involves ideas around helping us to have a permitting plan that doesn't require a constant back and forth with the agencies. And there's a bigger overall initiative here. We'll be bringing it to you as a presentation once they put the final application. But really, there are things related to toxicity testing and bioassays and a number of different permits, and these permits don't line up. And oftentimes the agencies have changes to their processes. So you can be ready to go with dredging like we were in 2023, and all of a sudden you're in a different tier for your sampling because the program changed midterm. And so the program in a nutshell would be to work with the agencies to try to make sure that permits are lined up in a fashion and that they're secured for a certain period of time, similar to what you do, for example, in a development agreement. The Forest WRX Alliance is the second one we're in. WRX is a group that uses lower quality or less margin timber and uses it typically for fiber and really focuses on what that would look like. They have a biomass cluster here regionally, and they put in a proposal for a forest products lab and structural testing lab for structural lumber, mass timber, or strand board. That program was also invited to reapply. We're participating in that because of the fiber market here in the Port of Humboldt Bay. as well as the landlord, because we have a lab that is a forest products lab, what was a pulp mill lab, at the RMT2 project. And then we have the large bay area that has a 50-ton crane that could support structural testing. And there's a vision for that to expand much more over time. Tomorrow I'll be doing another site visit with Cal Poly Humboldt and a number of people on their leadership team, as well as WRX, to take that a step further. So just a little good news there. It's always nice to get invited back. Those are coalitions or groups, so not directly the Harbor District, but the Harbor District will participate in their programs. We were on an AB3 staff workshop recently. Of course, that relates to preparedness to support offshore wind. And I just think it's important to always remind everyone that offshore wind is moving forward at the state level, despite the circumstance we have out there in the federal level. I'll let others report on the recent ruling, but things continue to move along. We had our City of Eureka 2x2, and I'm reporting on this specifically because there's been a lot of concern about the fueling station, which has come to its useful life end at, what is it called? Why am I going blank on their name? England Marine. Thank you, Aaron. They, of course, built a new building, and that isn't necessarily why their old fueling facility is at a point where it's no longer serviceable, but it's outreached its useful life and tank life. And for a period of time, it looked like we were not going to have fuel in the Port of Humboldt Bay, and we'd have to fuel shore, dockside or shoreside. But at this point in time, it looks like that has been cured, and the city has assured us that there'll be plenty of fuel available in the port. The Humboldt Bay Harbor Safety Committee met recently, and we have added an additional seat. So this is a voting member on the seat to represent aquaculture. Aquaculture has not been represented on the Harbor Safety Committee. So an application or request was put into the OSPR administrator. It was supported in the meeting, and so we're doing the clerical work to finalize that. At the January meeting, we'll be nominating candidates to fill that, and they'll get their governor's appointment to sit on the Humboldt Harbor Safety Committee. California Asbestos Districts Association is something that we've participated in more and more recently. I'm happy to say that they came and visit us and talked through a number of different administrative programs that are out there. They're opening up some new training modules, not only for staff, but for board members and alike. And they're also opening up some new programs that help us with debt and lending. And some of it is parity debt, which is something they didn't previously have. That's very attractive for small districts. In addition to that, they're going to have a new insurance program, including health insurance. So just some new opportunities there. And I'm glad that we're participating and that they're starting to call on us and come to see us. It certainly helps. And they've been very helpful for Mindy and I. We've had some procedural matters at the administrative level. Today, a couple of board members and myself met with California Assembly Member Chris Rogers and his local staffer, Heidi McHugh. We had a very strong visit, really enjoyed some beautiful weather out on the water, and talked specifically about offshore wind, our desires to develop a heavy lift marine terminal that can support offshore wind, and our aquaculture community, as well as the expansion of exports in the port. So, really grateful for that visit today. Is a very focused individual who really wants to help with the success of Humboldt as a whole, certainly including the bay and the port. And then we're celebrating Suk Choo Kim. This was an individual who not only was a tenant of the district, but a very strong individual in our community, somewhat of a civic leader, and he loved art. Had an incredible photography collection at his home, and we were recently contacted and asked if we would be interested in receiving some of his artwork. But we have a number of pieces. Mindy and I went and met with those representing the estate. We've been given through by donation a number of photographs in and around Humboldt Bay, things that represent our salt marsh waters, the naturalness of the bay, vessels. Things that you see, anchor chain, buoys, etc. And so this is one of the pieces that we brought back. It's quite smaller, but just want to share a little bit. We see a lot of beauty in this because we work in the tidelands and salt marshes, etc., all the time. But we'll have a larger display here in the district office very soon. And this is going to be a piece of artwork in some cases that are as long as 6 feet in length. And so Mindy and I are working on where we might be able to place them in the district office and possibly in the conference room. But What is 9 feet? Is it 9 feet long? Yeah. So this is really, and these are, it's just an incredibly creative eye. I don't know if any of you knew Sook Chu, but many of us did. John Nicolini, who rented from us for a great period of time at RMTQ, who's in creative plastic research, acquired one of his businesses. So we had a pretty good relationship with him through there as well. And Sook Chu was a tenant of the district for quite a number of years at RMT2. So just want to acknowledge that and say thank you. Rob?
Right. Between the last board meeting and today, I had the opportunity to go up to Coos Bay. I was asked to work with them on their State of the Coasts conference and present about development here in Humboldt Bay, looking at the heavy lift marine terminal as an example. It's a really good experience for me to see Coos Bay and how much similarity there is between our two ports. And then also just past Friday at 11:20. Was the king tide. And so I went to the RMT site and just took some pictures. And most of the time, when you take pictures of the king tide, it's kind of hard to just not have water next to the land. It doesn't look all that impressive. But then I found things like this, not necessarily directly related to king tide. It's clearly some erosion going on there. But if you know the facilities here, that is not a floating dock. And so that is getting a little close to the edge. And then there are places where things shouldn't be underwater. And then I found a couple of drop inlets for the stormwater system. So this is designed so that water is supposed to go across the ground through a pipe and into the bay, but it is nearly coming from the bay into the pipe. And then I actually found one where that was actually happening. So water was trickling in from the bay into the drop inlet. And then there's some stranded infrastructure out in the water. And just a couple of thoughts. I don't know what it takes to get a tide gauge, but it might be interesting for us to have one on district property. And Chris, you probably know a lot more about that. You can see that at this king tide, it was very calm. So that means a lot about the height of the water there. There was no storm surge, no wind waves, no precipitation coming from the land side. So, someday we're going to have a king tide and a storm at the same time, and that's going to be
Very telling.
and then looking to the future, sea level rise as well as climate change influencing storm patterns. So just something to think about on our biggest property there.
Yeah, just briefly for me tonight, there's some new Brown Act legislation that goes into effect January 1, 2026 that adds a little bit more flexibility for some of the teleconferencing rules. And so we're putting a memo together to staff, and I'll send it to the board as well, just to update you on what is slight relaxation of their teleconferencing rules.
We don't have a district treasurer report tonight. We don't have a district engineering report, and we do not have a district planner report.
Right, thank you. Then I'll move on to commissioner reports. Start over with you, Aaron.
Well, as a commercial fisherman and a recreational fisherman in Humboldt County right now, the most interesting thing is Dungeness crab season. And it gets more and more complicated all the time. And the latest change in the different ways they're trying to eliminate entanglements with whales, a new program called RAMP 2.0. And basically, the effect of that for this year is there's already been three entanglements in California in 2025. Therefore, the season cannot open until 2026, January 1st. And that's where we're at as far as whale entanglements. But there's also a requirement that there be no crabs that are over 30 parts per million of bentonic acid in their viscera. And there's been more than one case of that, and some pretty high numbers actually on the Northern California coast. So once we get bentonic acid levels down, once January 1st passes, perhaps there will be a quality test to see if the meat pickout's above 25%, which everybody's pretty confident it will be. Interestingly enough, Oregon has already passed all these hurdles for their season and don't have any price. So We're kind of stuck in limbo as commercial fishermen in California till maybe as late as February. And in Oregon, they're actually able to go fishing commercially and recreationally. But commercially, they don't have any price offers this time. So it's going to be interesting. That's all I have for tonight.
Well, I like you less happy to report than I did prior to the report because I thought you were going to attempt to trail us.
I don't have much to report. I too went to the lunch today, with the tour and meeting with Chris Rogers, who I thoroughly enjoy and appreciate his efforts and work that he puts in. He works hard. Not a small district, if you guys don't realize that. It's a pretty large job to work in this district for any legislator. I also sit on the REDEC board for this board, and I've been there for quite a while. I've been the chair of the board, I've been vice chair, I've been an at-large member. I literally have been on that. I've been our representative on the REDEC board for 10 years. And I was at the meeting the other night. I enjoy it. I thoroughly enjoy it. I enjoy the group. I enjoy the work that they do and the people that are on the board. But it's probably a good idea for this board to think about replacing me on that board. So I would like to ask that you consider that. Yeah.
I'll consider
Your Majesty.
it.
Your Highness. That's all I got. And I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever your thing is. Enjoy the peace and joy that comes with the season.
Thank you. Ebenezer?
Ebenezer.
Okay.
Okay, I have a comment and then I have two announcements. I sit at this side of the dais and I'm always looking up at Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District. So I'm just exceedingly pleased to be in part of the conversations with our executive director about getting a conservation recreation director because we spend a lot of the time making decisions about our properties and heavy lift marine terminals and Nordic aqua farms, et cetera. So the harbor piece is really uplifted. So we spend a lot of our, it takes a lot of our concentration. So I'm exceedingly pleased that we are, planning to being more intentional about uplifting the recreation and conservation pieces of it as well, of our mission. The announcements are the Sea Level Rise Institute at housed at Cal Poly Humboldt is having a meeting tomorrow in which folks from Mendocino, from Port Bragg and Noyo Harbor and elsewhere are going to come and share their some of their experiences with sea level rise and their collaborations, with state and other and federal agencies regarding sea level rise. So that will be interesting. That will be recorded. So if anybody wants to see that, I can forward it to you. Normally I attend those religiously as a member of it. But tomorrow morning also Emily Sinkhorn from the city of Arcata is going to be presenting on sea level rise and the city of Arcata's adaptions to it, particularly the wastewater treatment plant area in Arcata Marsh area. And that's going to be in Natural Resources Building 101, the bottom story, the big lecture hall in our building at 10 a.m. tomorrow. So I'll be attending that, and then I'll watch the video. So I'll report back to you on anything that's relevant to the Harbor District around that. But I wanted just the general public to know that those two meetings are available. There's always more meetings to go to, but we sure appreciate you being here tonight. Echo Greg, happy Hanurama Kwanzaa Solstice. I think that gets them all.
I have nothing to report.
I also don't have much to report. I was out of town most of the past month caring for my mother who's had some medical issues. So just encourage everyone in their happy holiday season to pay attention to your families. Give love to your families. I also had the opportunity to meet with Assemblymember Chris Rogers today too, and just have been impressed with His interest in Humboldt and this large region, I guess he had come here from Hayfork, so he's really hitting some of the corners of the district. So that's nice to see. So let's just go ahead and move right along, and let's receive a status update regarding the Humble Bay Offshore Wind Heavy Lift Marine Terminal project.
Right. As you probably recall, the project, for the most part, some temporary pause. We're reconfiguring budget with the state, but we anticipate being completely back in action in January. Just a really speculative schedule, pre-construction this coming January. All the permitting design studies back on track. Monthly committee meetings will resume. Recall that we have 7 community advisory committees. And then monthly board updates will resume with the technical speakers instead of just myself. March, a new suite of studies will begin. This assumes that we're starting back up in January. Don't know the month yet, but the public or the community advisory committee who was working towards planning for a public meeting, so that will be in our future. And our executive director came up with the idea of having an open house at some point. So we're exploring that possibility. By June, the target is for most of the studies to be completed and released so that the CEQA analysis team can begin their impact analysis. Maybe another public meeting near the end of the year, and then March of 27 is really technically the latest that the DEIR could go before you if we're going to stick to our grant deadlines. And as we understand it, there are no possible extensions of the grants that we're working with here. So that would be a presentation of the CEQA impacts, public comments, your direction, whether to proceed with the project as described or modify it, and then announcement of a final EIR public hearing. And then probably in May, the final EIR could come before you for a final vote. Construction, still very speculative here, but the earliest that the mitigation sites could be constructed, if that other schedule sticks, is 2027. And that would be on-site wetlands, off-site restoration, some various forms of fish habitat, wetlands, eelgrass restoration. And then the terminal itself, earliest likely date for construction to begin would be 29. That's the wharf and the berth and the uplands, stuff like that. And then some additional mitigation that has to be concurrent with the on-site construction, like osprey and pile removal. And then 3 years of construction. This is, as soon as the project's back on track, this is the list of priorities here. So it's going to be a lot of field sampling, dredge material sampling, modeling, finalizing the design, setting CEQA into full production mode. And then recall that there was a whole list of technical presentations. These are the ones we didn't get to, so these are ahead of you. And then these are past topics that could be revisited, and that could be at your direction if there was things you really wanted to focus on. And then just recall, we also have this Waterfront Facility Improvement Program grant, which includes a lot of community engagement related tasks, green terminal related tasks, stakeholder requested supplemental studies, enhanced engineering, and mitigation site planning. That's it.
Any questions or comments from the board?
Yeah, I've got one here. Rob, a lot, there's so much, technical advisory and public advisory committees, 7 to 12 of them, depending on how you count them. Are their recommendations going to be memorialized somehow into, or in what ways will their recommendations be memorialized in the CEQA process? Will there be appendices? Will those translate to mitigations that don't necessarily won't relate back to those committees that help create them? How might we be able to acknowledge what the public has brought in the CEQA document through these committee meetings and not just through the final comments on the CEQA?
Yep. Great question. I don't feel fully prepared to answer that in detail yet, but I can say that at least some of the committee recommendations will come to you as presentations. So part of the staff presentation. So for instance, the Community Advisory Committee, some of their recommendations are just being automatically implemented. So like aquaculture said, hey, we need to know about this and this and this. It's not something you were planning on studying. So we just already did it. So the answer to your question is going to fall into multiple categories. If it's memorialized directly into CEQA, I'm going to have to think about that, but I can get you a report on that at the next update.
Sure. I mean, the driving interest for this is just that the public who donated so much of their time to be on these committees, that I want them to be able to recognize their work somehow in the final document.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty meaningful that we pursued a grant to do technical studies that the public asked us for. So there's a whole slide here of studies that we wouldn't have otherwise done if our committees hadn't asked us to.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions?
Nope. I will echo that, though. That's a really good point, especially since, you know, we have been saying, and I think have been working towards trying to be as participatory as possible and do this development in a way, you know, in a meaningful way. So I think documenting that, because, you know, I saw some of those dates for when construction will begin and end, and it's going to be hard to remember what we did in 2024 and 2025 back in those days. So I think, you know, maybe making use of some of our consultants on that to making sure that a good record is kept of these meetings and suggestions and how they were acted upon would really behoove us.
Yeah, I can say that we have very detailed agendas for every meeting with a table of all of the attendees, all of the members of each committee, and then a record of who attends each meeting, and then detailed minutes, as well as a second document that is like the primary findings and action items from every meeting. So 3 times 7 times 12 kind of, you know, documents. So we have a lot of records of what the committees have said, exactly how we're memorializing the recommendations. If they've even had any, I'll report at the next meeting.
Well, any comments or questions from the public on this item? If not, I'll move along and we shall consider adopting resolution 2025-08, a resolution of intention to approve an amendment to contract between the California Public Employees Retirement System and the Board of Commissioners of the Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District.
Well, thank you. We're bringing this back to the board. We had some questions to be answered and review. I want to let you know that we did that. We reviewed both the staff and our legal counsel and spoke with commissioners in regard to this item. From time to time, we have to update our agreements with CalPERS. That's part of our compensation system here for our staff. And recently, through contract negotiations, there was the request for the district to participate in Social Security because previously we did not. And so by the election of the employees that have the option to opt into Social Security, we have to change our contract with CalPERS. And so before you is a resolution to go ahead and make this change. And then we'll bring back to you for adoption next month the contract that supports it. So happy to answer questions. Hopefully we're familiar with this item, but very willing to talk
through it. I'd like a motion to approve it.
Second. All right, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion or questions?
No.
All right. Well, any discussion or questions from the public on this item? Seeing none, this is a resolution, so we need a roll call.
All right. Commissioner Dale?
Here. Yes.
Commissioner Benson?
I am here.
Sure.
Commissioner Newman?
Yes.
Commissioner Norton?
Yes.
And President Coleman?
Yes. All right. Passes unanimously. New business. We will receive a special presentation on King Tides by Troy Nicolini, meteorologist in charge of NOAA, National Weather Service, Eureka, California.
Yeah. And commercial.
Now, Chris asked me to
bring a bin.
Bring a bin.
Is there a king tide in there?
So to explain to king tides, did I understand my terms correctly?
Perfect.
The thing about king tides is if you really want to understand king tides, you have to understand tides. Now you might be saying to yourself, Troy, I understand tides. But I can tell you, tides is one of those topics that, you know, some topics, they look complicated. You dive in, you realize, ah, it's not that complicated. That's not tides. The deeper you go, the more messy tides get. But I think I can boil it down this way. For the rest of your life, you will truly understand the only tides are king tides. Is that what you'd like?
Yes,
Okay.
please.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, just
Let's
take
see all the props.
Oh, we got some props. This is Earth.
Yeah.
I was really, you know, sun's a lot bigger than Earth, so I played scouring for something. Then it dawned on me, oh, I have a perfect sun. This is sun. Right. Our moon.
Could probably bring over the podium, maybe.
So, in about 7 minutes, my intention is to clear this up for you once and for all. We'll see if I'm successful. Everybody's pretty familiar with, don't need the sun yet. We're going to hold on for that. Pretty familiar with gravity, but you know, I drop the ball and gravity pulls it to the earth, right? Not exactly. The earth and the ball are attracted to each other. So technically, the earth moves toward the ball a little bit as well. So that's actually really how gravity works between two masses, and they are drawn to each other. So that's important to understand tides. The big one is the earth, and the little one is the moon. So, you know, it's spinning around. Gravity is pulling the earth and them together, and centrifugal force, which is sort of an imaginary force, is trying to fling this moon off away from Earth, right? So everybody kind of appreciates that. So there's a balance going on as these two spin relative to each other. So just keep that in mind. So we got our Earth here. Earth and moon. So the moon pulls the water off the face of the Earth towards it, makes a bulge. That's the tide. All right. So it's a bulge of water that's sitting there. Now, this wraps around the Earth as well, once per month, but the Earth rotates every 24 hours, right? So what's happening, this tag is where we are sitting right there. See that? Close to, that's where we are. And so as the Earth rotates around, it, wherever you are, goes under that bulge once every 24 hours. That's just the moon and Earth interacting together, okay? So if that's all that's going on, you'd have one high tide every 24 hours, and you'd have a low tide every 24 hours. So pretty clear, right? Pretty simple. One thing to notice is that, I'll leave that in a second. So it turns out there isn't just a bulge right here from the moon. There's also a bulge on the backside of the Earth from the moon. Already, already know that? Am I covering something that's too basic, or is that intriguing to you?
It's intriguing.
Okay. So it turns out the moon interacting with the Earth causes two bulges on the Earth, the near side bulge and the far side bulge. This one's pretty intuitive because gravity's pulling it, right? And they're in that balance. It's, you know, explaining it without these rotating is not as intuitive, in my opinion, as explaining it with them rotating. So we go back to this rotational model. Now, if I told you that the moon had water on it as well, and then I spun this, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I can see that. There'd be water flinging it off the backside of the moon. There'd be gravity trying to pull it back to the Earth. The centripetal force would be trying to push it away from the moon, but they'd be in balance. So there'd be a bulge of water on the backside of this moon. That's pretty intuitive, right? From flinging that around, that there could be some water on the backside. There'd also be water on the front side because that's closer to the Earth in this case, and so it'd be pulling the water this way. Now, that's if there was water in the moon. I'm using that as an example because it's really obvious that that's spinning around the center of axis in this case. The reason why there's a bulge on Earth is it turns out this is not what's really happening. Remember, these two are both being drawn to each other and they're spinning relative to each other. So the pivot of axis is actually right about here. It's not in the middle of the Earth, it's about three quarters of the way over. So this is what's really happening. Those two are in space doing this kind of number right here. And so water is being flung to the backside of the Earth as a result of this relationship with the moon. So that's the more intuitive way. you look at a book, it'll describe how this is closer. So the water's closer, it pulls a little bulge here. This is closer to the moon, so it pulls down that way a little bit. And then this is farther away, so it hangs back. But I think without these moving, for me, it's not as intuitive, because this is way intuitive to me. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So everybody believes that there's two bulges from the moon interacting with the Earth. Cool. All right, so here's our two bulges right there. So the near side bulge and the far side bulge. Now watch this, now that we have two bulges accepted, watch this tap. And so the Earth is tipped this way, right? Tip it the right way.
Want me to hold the bulges for you?
That would be helpful, but no, I've mastered this.
Okay.
I just got to make sure I get the blue facing you guys. So as the Earth rotates, you'll notice that the tab goes higher on the bulge in this case than it does, I'm sorry, higher on this one. It barely clips the bulge because of the tilt of the Earth relative to the axis that this thing's going up. So the moon and the Earth are in this plane. This is up about 5 degrees, but they're pretty much in this plane. But it's not aligned with the equator. So as the Earth rotates, it barely clips the bulge that's closer, and it goes deep into the bulge that's farther away. See that?
Mm-hmm.
So now you know for the rest of your life why there's a high and a low high. That's why. So high and a low high right there. Okay, so that's every 24 hours. It's just the Earth and the moon. Of course, you know the moon goes around the Earth once every 29 days, roughly. So imagine this thing's doing its thing, right? This spins, one day happens, and this is starting to move, doing its monthly rotation. It turns out during one day of rotation of the Earth, so let's call that one day right there, the moon has moved 50 minutes this way. In the course of 29 days, it's going to get all the way around. You divide that up by 360 degrees, it's 50 minutes. So another 24 hours goes by, and the moon has moved 50 minutes this way. So the tidal impact that the moon has on the Earth is shifting 50 minutes later each day. Aaron reads a lot of tide tables. Have you ever noticed the tide's always 50 minutes later every day? Now you know why. The moon is chasing the Earth slowly as it goes. Okay, so that's why you see that. Now, so this puppy goes around the Earth. This is a really important part for king tides. This goes around the Earth once every 29 days, but it's not a perfect circle. It's an ellipse. So it passes closer sometimes and farther other times. And here's one of the really key fundamental principles for tides. The more proximity, the higher the tides, the stronger the gravitational force. So if the moon is close to the Earth, it's going to cause a bigger tide. And if it's farther away, it's going to cause a lesser tide. All right. Now we're going to throw the sun in here and complicate things even further. Try really hard not to step on the rotates wheel model there. Well, now we have the sun. It's a pretty good sun. I think. Pretty proud of that. It looks like the sun. You can change the tone on this. I made it look yellow. All right. Exact same thing applies. You can kind of ignore the moon for a second, but you've got a near side bulge and you have a far side bulge. And so you get the exact same thing with this interaction with the sun and the Earth. And of course, you know that Earth goes around the sun once per year, right? All the way around, and it's an ellipse. And it's closer sometimes than other times. Who would guess that it's closer to the sun in the summertime? Anybody in the public want to venture? Oh, somebody knows. You're a meteorologist?
No.
Well, which hemisphere are we in?
Northern hemisphere, thank you. So it's actually closest to the sun in the winter. Now, turns out that that's not what drives our seasons. Tilted the Earth. So in the winter, even though it's closer, the angle the sun makes with the northern hemisphere is much lower than in the summer when it's over here. And because of the tilt, now it's blasting right over in the northern hemisphere.
So you're saying the tilt of the Earth's axis is the reason for the season?
Yes. So it's farther away.
Favorite holiday card.
Yeah. It's farther away in the summer and closer in the winter. So I've already told you enough right now. Two pieces of information. One, proximity is really important. And so the Earth is closest to the sun in the winter. We get our most severe king tides in the winter because that's one of the major factors. If you read online, and you may have read online already about what makes a king tide, it will say it's because the moon is closest to the Earth. Okay? You probably read that. I'll explain how subtle and important it is to have that correct in your head, because it's not exactly true. It's true sometimes, that makes me really good times. So now I'm just gonna walk through a couple of key things to put together the final piece for understanding king crabs. Make sure I didn't miss anything. So combined. So now we have the sun and the moon. Now, sometimes they're lined up. So the moon and the sun are aligned. The moon causes a near side bulge, and the sun causes a near side bulge. And so that obviously can make a pretty big time. Now, this is a new moon, by the way. That means there would be no moon. The sun is hitting this side of the moon, and you can't see the moon, right? So it's dark. And by the way, the sun is so big, and this actually is often it moves up and down relative to, unless it's during an eclipse, the sun will hit it, even if it's on the backside, the sun hits it, just for the record. So this doesn't make it look that way, but this would be up higher, and the sun would be gigantic. So, all right, so this one, in the summertime, the Earth's over here, in summertime, double bulge, sun and moon are both pulling on it, right? That's a new moon. That's a king tide. We have king tides in the summer as well. Not always. The reason why this is an extra big tide is because you notice the tilt of the Earth with this particular alignment. It's leaning in. So for us, we've got both these things affecting the bulges, and we are hitting deep in the bulge because of the tilt of the Earth. So this is the summertime king tide. Now, it's the sun is not as close to the Earth for this one, so that effect is diminished, right? And there's something else, but that is a king tide. Now, when this wraps over on this side, you still have the double bulge, right? Backside bulge from the moon, backside bulge from the sun. But we're barely, at our latitude, we're barely passing through those bulges, so we get much diminished high tides. So, sorry, this was supposed to be over here. So now, this is a full moon. The sun's hitting it, you can see a full moon. And so you still get some high tides, but they're not as high because of the tilt in there. So these are the bigger summertime high tides. Now these are quarter moons, but it's over here. Sun's pulling one direction and the moon's pulling the other, right? So they're not adding up. So anytime you look in the sky and see a quarter moon, you know that they're orthogonal to each other, because here's the sun. You can see the sun illuminating half of the moon. So you know it's orthogonal. So if you forget everything else I tell you, look in the sky, you see a half moon, you don't have to look at your tide table. They're not gonna be very big high tides. Turns out the sun is so much less impactful to tides than the moon, that all the sun really does in this case is keep the low tide from getting really low. So this isn't that very big of a high tide because it isn't being doubled up, and this is not a very low tide because the sun is kind of holding it up. So those are neat tides, and you'll see them in the tide tables. High isn't very high, the low isn't very low. It looks kind of almost monochromatic, just the same boring tide. That's a neat tide. So did I cover anything on that? So that's summer. Now, we'll go to winter at a time in a minute. That's the most exciting, but we have to cover it fall, and spring's the same. So when the moon is over here, you can have the moon and the sun working orthogonally together, so you don't get very big tides. You get neat tides. There's no big tides. You can have them aligned. Sun, Earth, and moon are aligned. And so you would think, wow, you get some big tides, right? Because this one has a bulge, this one has a bulge, and they're doubling up. But if you look at, because of the axis of the Earth, we never get deep in the bulge. We barely clip the bulge. And that's true on this side as well. So even though you can get alignment, you're never going to get gigantic tides. Our most mild tides are in the fall and the spring. And our biggest tides are in the summer and winter. So let's go to winter and wrap up what king tides are all about and why they're so irritating sometimes to predict. So Earth is closest to the sun. Moon and Earth are aligned. Now the biggest ones in the winter, so here's our double net bulge, right? And you can see that when you have a new moon in the winter, you're clipping the top of the bulge. But when you have a full moon, when the sun's over here, okay, and you've got the double bulge over here, now you're clipping deep in the bulge. So the very biggest tides we get are when this happens. So we have a full moon in the winter, and we are deep in the bulge, and the bulges are adding up because of these two things. And the Earth and the sun are closest together. So you have a question? So those are the biggest tides we get. Now, Here's the interesting thing. Winter solstice, summer solstice are almost the same day every year, right? I mean, very, very predictable. King tides are not. Anybody know why that is? This is a subtlety that really makes it okay. Because it turns out that this moon is going in an ellipse around the Earth, but the ellipse is rotating around the Earth as well. Periodicity of 8.5 years. So basically, it's close and then it goes a little farther, right? And then next year, it rotates out a little bit. So now, and I'm exaggerating. This is highly exaggerated. It's barely an ellipse. And so this is basically going on like this over a period of 8 years. And so you can still have things align, but it's never going to be as severe as when it's possible to align with the moon, the Earth. The moon, the Earth, and the Sun, and they're all aligned, and the Earth and moon are closest together. Every winter, the Sun and the Earth are closest together. But only when the ellipse is aligned in this way do you get the really big king tides. And I think this is really important for your role in the Harvard Commission because, that means that it has a episodic nature that can catch you off guard. Like, we're having the biggest king tides ever. Well, the biggest king tides in 10 years. And someone might blame that on something that's going on, something the Harbor District's doing wrong. You're not mitigating for coastal erosion. And in fact, that you're going into that phase where the ellipse is aligning so that you get the quadruple factor. And this is the biggest of the big king tides. This moon, when it does this, by the way, is called a super moon because it's closest and it's a full moon. So it's the biggest, brightest moon you'll see on the horizon. The moon in this ellipse also, by the way, changes its plane. So sometimes it's going like this, diving up. And when it's up here and it's a super moon, it's really bright and high in the sky and it's amazing. You can see it. By the way, that continues to pivot. So sometimes it does go behind the Earth. That's when you get an eclipse. And it continues to pivot and it gets down here and you can see it again. So that's the movement of the moon. And that's what messes everything up. That's why there's no rhyme or reason to king tides. You may have noticed that. So this year they were. December 4th, I think, was one. Is that right? Was it one of the big ones? What's that?
Fourth and fifth.
Fourth and fifth, and it was a full moon, right? So that's what you had, right? The sun could shoot across there, give you a full moon. So that is king tides. Any questions?
Sure.
Yes. Bravo, by the way. That was fun.
A little bit clear?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
How large, we're talking about the oceans here, but are other water bodies affected similarly, like larger seas that are landlocked
Oh,
or?
thanks for mentioning that because I should have mentioned that tides are messed up by continents. And that's why they're extra complicated because the continents stop and don't maneuver that bolt.
Right. Yeah.
And so, yeah. And so the Great Lakes have minor tides, but smaller bodies won't see them with tides.
Okay.
And oh, by the way, I mean, this is really the closest out. This all happens in the winter, and storms happen in the winter. And Bravo already mentioned about storms and storm surge. So if this aligns with really strong south winds, or we feel like it takes 4 or 5 days, that setup when we have a front move through and a front move through, and we get south winds, a small break, south wind, small break. That is for our coast and our latitude the setup that causes the strongest storm surge. So if this happens towards the end of a 5 or 6 or 7 day sequence. The landfalling fronts, strong low pressure areas that kick our ass with south winds, that is the perfect storm. If you've got the ellipse such that you've got a super moon lined up with the sun and the earth, and that happens right after a sequence of storms. And on our tributaries today, like Freshwater Creek, for example, if we had a rain event at the right timing also, then you'd have that compounding, as well. Statistically, you should know it's very hard to get that many things to line up against you. It's weird how hard it is statistically. If you do the analysis, the probability of one is every 60 years or every 10 years, and the probability of the other one, like the river flood, is every 100 years. When you add them all together, the probability becomes like 450 years. So it's fortunately, it's hard to get it, but you do need to push for it. Thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Really appreciate that. Any further discussion or comments from the board or public? Yes.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why have the tides been so much higher than predicted for like a year and a half?
I wish I knew. You'd think tides would be predicted by actually plotting out the movement of the planets, but they're not. They're predicted based on Fourier analysis of sort of the data, and so it's not a perfect science. And so if you see the entire coast is off by, and this is something to check, if you're trying to figure out storm surge or just anomaly in the data, if the entire West Coast is running high, and like the actual tide is higher than predicted, that's just a failing of the predictions, generally speaking, because you can't get storm surge up from, you know, San Diego to Washington. So do look for that. Call my office if you're trying to figure out if it's storm surge or a long-term, you know, behavior, and we can kind of tell you what we're looking at. But yeah, good question.
That was fascinating.
I like science.
No, yeah.
All right, so we'll, I guess, see if the phase of the moon impacts considering approval of amendments to employment agreement between the district and Chris Mickelson.
Yeah, thanks. Over the last couple of meetings, the district board has conducted its performance evaluation of Chris. And I think the board, after tonight's meeting, does intend to return to closed session to finish up that component. But I am ready to bring to the board amendments to Chris's contract that reflect an extension of his term, which is otherwise set to expire at the end of this month. And so tonight, I'll read off what those material amendments are to the contract. I'll need direction via motion and approval to approve those, and I will bring back at your January meeting the actual form of the amendment for formal ratification. So first is the term extension. As I mentioned, term currently concludes at the end of this year. The proposal is to extend the term for a three-year period through December 31st, 2028. With respect to compensation, the board is proposing a 3% cost of living increase to Chris's existing salary, and that the contract would also build in an automatic cost of living increase, which the existing contract does not currently contain. We would also include, commencing January 2026, a monthly vehicle allowance in the amount of $400 per month. The one-time incentive bonus tied to issuance of a coastal development permit for the heavy lift terminal project would be retained at the $5,000 amount, which is in his existing contract. I'm proposing additional amendments to the contract to bring it up to best practices, which is a definition of cause, that voluntary resignations notice be given 90 days in advance, and some standard provisions about board and executive director interactions that are standard and were not included in the existing contract. I'm also proposing to do some housekeeping. When Chris's contract was first approved, there was a transition period from deputy director to executive director. And so I'm removing those provisions that no longer apply. And so what will come before you in January is an amended and fully restated contract so that all the operative provisions are contained in the same contract. But for tonight, I do need approval of the compensation and the term extension and the rest of the edits you'll see in the final form of the agreement that will come back in January. A motion and a second is what I'd be asking.
Approve the amendments and the employment agreement between the district and Chris Mickelson.
Second. I have a motion and a second. Any questions or comments?
Nope. Being none, bring it to the public.
Questions or comments on the moment? All right, we'll bring it back. I'll just say thank you so much for your service. I think your tenure here as executive director and previous has been very fruitful and successful, and look forward to, I mean, roped you in for at least another 3 years. So very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
So with a motion and a second, all in favor of the amendments to the employment agreement between the district and Chris Mickelson, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed or abstain? None. So passes. And that is the last item on our open agenda tonight. As Ryan mentioned, we're going to move back in, I guess, hopefully not too long for a closed session to continue closed session. So with that, the open session is adjourned. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Troy. Troy, thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that presentation. That was great. And go and have a